This is CliffCentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the Finance Team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel today is Safia Bulle of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Hi, Richard.
As well as Leandi Streeter, business coach and guide from Raise Corp.
Thank you, Richard.
Last week, we discussed ethical decisions and dilemmas, an interesting podcast. Go to the Cliff Central website to download a podcast on that show. Really makes you one think, particularly given where we are in today's day and age. Remember our hashtag keep ethics alive. Today's theme, we're going to be speaking with Musidi Modisi, founding curator of the Global Shapers Stellenbosch Hub, about her recent trip to Shanghai with a group of 8 shapers and what she discovered. And we also have Greg Sarandos with us in studio. Greg spent the last 2 years in Silicon Valley working with startups on messaging and the whole question of the go-to-market strategy. He's now back in SA working with local technology and disruptive companies on their marketing strategy. So, Greg, thank you for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Great. So, Musidi. Tell us a little bit about Global Shapers. What is the Global Shapers program? We seem to have lost Musidi. We've lost Musidi. Okay, great. Okay, Musidi, are you with us on the line?
I am on your line.
Okay. Yeah, that's much better, much better. You were very soft initially. Fantastic. Great. Okay. Thank you. So tell us a little bit more about what is Global Shapers. An interesting concept.
So the Global Shapers is an initiative of the World Economic Forum that gives young people between the ages 23 and 33 a platform to create hub-based change within their community. And so it was initiated by the World Economic Forum in 2011 with a need to give young people a seat at the table. So in South Africa, we have 6 hubs. 3 are up in the Gauteng region, so in Tshwane, in Johannesburg, and in Soweto. And then we have 1 in Stellenbosch and 1 in Cape Town, together with 1 in Durban. And then globally, there's about 600 hubs totally.
Okay. So that's quite an interesting... And what was the objective of setting up Global Shapers? What was the objective when they set this out?
So Professor Klaus Schwab, who's the founder and the brains behind the World Economic Forum, thought it was important for the community or the forum to have the youth having advocacy and their voices in shaping policy. Before 2011, there was quite a big gap and discrepancy around that. And I think the big driver catalyst was when we had the Arab Spring when the Arab Spring happened in North Africa. These are the youth taking matters to their own hands about wanting change and reform. It is important to include them in these dialogues and conversations. So as that happened, they found a strategy and a way to integrate young people by forming this community, but making it more independent and kind of self-run than how other chapters or initiatives in the forum are run, so that we can be able to create local impact. And it's been a life-changing experience, to be honest, being a shaper. You kind of change your paradigm on an ongoing basis, trying to live a life that's most purposeful, and you ask yourself, you know you have the ability to make the world better or to improve the state of the world. So how can you do it collaboratively with others?
Okay. So now talk to us a little bit about this Shanghai excursion that you went on. why Shanghai? And tell us a little bit of background as to what you do and how this is done.
Okay, so the policy in Shanghai was like the mandate of it is exactly the exact spot of what our mandate is as hubs or as shapers, as we call ourselves, which is to create local impact. So the Shanghai hub invited 8 shapers to come over to see if they could come into the city to create impact and improve something within 7 days. So it was one of the ideas of one of the shapers. And, you know, China has a lot of challenges around things like pollution, things like the need to kind of create better access to clean transportation, if you want to call it that, that doesn't emit a lot of, like, energy. But I work in financial services, so I was very interested around seeing if I could learn around the savings culture in China and bring back the knowledge to improve the savings culture here in South Africa. So I went about going there under the invitation of the Shanghai Hub to go and go over there and improve something in the week. And then it was a really fantastic experience as well to just understand the role that technology plays in how people save and consume in China. And they also have this very fascinating custom of giving money as gifts in red envelopes for the Chinese New Year or on a great basis. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting to go there and learn also around, do they actually invest that disposable income and that they get extra as gifts, and what can we learn from that?
Mm. So that's an interesting, let's call it cultural element. I mean, I don't know anybody in the room on my panel here. Did anybody give you a little red envelope any time in the last year? I certainly haven't been gifted any sort of money of late. But I want to explore that a little bit more, Mercedes, in terms of how that whole cultural space works and what you observed, because I think there's some important learnings that we can get from that. Before we go there, I mean, Greg, one of the things that I want your input on, you've obviously also got some great international experience. The one thing that always strikes me as people move across the world is we always think that the world is such a small place and things are so the internet's everywhere and everything's like this, let's call it, homogeneous world out there. But cultures, and I mean what Mercedes is talking about, the little gift giving in the red envelope in the Chinese gift environment, you know, there's uniqueness in many other cultural perspectives. And I'd be interested, as we go through this conversation, I'm inviting you to just share with us your insights that you've seen globally with different sort of cultural behavior sets as we go. Now, Mercedes, tell us about this Chinese experience in a little bit more detail in terms of this whole red... I must tell you, as you said it, the red envelope, giving, I was like for a moment there, I thought for a moment you were going to tell us all about Gupta leaks and brown enveloping going on. that's the thing we understand well in this country, yeah. Obviously. But tell us a little bit about this cultural space. How does this process work? Many people wouldn't understand this.
So I did a little bit of research before leaving around it and actually got somebody to give me a little tutor of the history and the origin of it, how it differs from, like, whether you come from the north of China or the south. And so, like, for years and years, it used to be, like, a custom by which if you give somebody this red envelope over New Year's.
So, yeah, it's an interesting cultural space, in terms of how they move... and how the from a customary perspective, this almost, let's call it the giving happens. I think the one thing that I did pick up is this whole question of, okay, so now you've got a gift. What are you doing with it? And I mean, I think that for me is one of the things that I want to explore a little more around. So there's all this money flowing around gifting as part of the Chinese cultural space, but what do they do with all of this?
So I'm sure Greg's going to talk about what they're going to do with it, or Modisa's going to come back and talk about what they're going to do with it. But I mean, when you look at many of the Eastern cultures, gift giving is such a critical part of doing business, because there's the practice of abundance, and there's the idea that if you are practicing abundance and you are giving, you are creating a pathway for you to be receiving. And so there is this ebb and flow of, you are part of a bigger ecosystem, and if you play your part in the ecosystem, you'll also be rewarded equally for how you play and show up in the ecosystem. And so gift giving is like, it's a modern day kind of, you know, offering to the universe to ensure that you have your place in the ecosystem as well.
Yeah, back in the 90s, I lived in Tokyo for 5 years, mm-hmm. and the Japanese have their own gift giving. But certainly the junior level I was on, what we were exposed to was golf outings, dinners, nights out, bottles of whiskey. It was that kind of thing. But what we see here in South Africa, and what we see in China and other places, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars
of
gift giving per transaction, it gets to be too much. What makes the Americans unique in this context is we have something called the Foreign Corruption Act. Mm. And basically, if I were to give somebody a bribe today, the FBI would swoop down and take me to some black ops center, you know, in North Africa before they had me returned to the U.S. It's a very, very serious thing for the U.S. Now, it doesn't mean the Americans don't get what they want. They just have other methods to get what they want, if that makes sense.
So something that I used to remember as a South African is, you know, that before it sort of could become corrupted in terms of the gift-giving side of things, you know, could be seen as a bribe and so forth, was, you know, back in the day, it was traditionally part of, you know, Christmas, birthdays, etc., where $100 really went a long way, you know.
But I do think that what Mosidi is talking about is not bribery. I think it's the practice of generosity. It's a New Year celebration, and we have the red envelope, and it's part of the tradition.
It's a custom, and that is also symbolic. Yeah, very much so. And back in the day in South Africa as well, we had, I don't know if you guys did it, I think it's an English tradition where, you know, you would have a pudding with a penny or something in it, and you'd be the lucky person if you were on the receiving end.
I remember distinctly 1 year growing up, the bakery near my grandparents decided that they thought that a certain charity needed more, you know, more funding. So what they decided to do was they said they would donate a portion of the profits from the Christmas puddings that they made that year to this particular charity. And then the owner of the bakery decided that he would put a little bit more incentive into the red envelope, or the gift. And he went out and purchased 10, I think it is a tenth or, you know, 1/10 ounce Kruger Rands.
Wow.
Okay. Because these Christmas puddings always came with, you know, whatever at the time, 20 cents or 50 cents, whatever's little pieces in them as part of the, you know, genuine thing. And so that year there were 1/10 ounce Kruger Rands placed at random in the Christmas puddings that this bakery was doing. Well, I don't even need to tell you what happened to the volume of trade and what that charity was gifted at the end of it, because now everybody was buying their Christmas puddings from this bakery to try and acquire their opportunity to get the Kruger Rands. So yeah, gift giving, I think, is part of the culture of many different societies. I think for me, and we're trying to get Musidi back on the line, we are having some challenges with that. The one thing that was very clear, if I look at what she experienced in China, was just how over time the demographic, you know, as the population had split with the, you know, the older generation and the younger generation, and where they had gone with, let's call it, the taking the gift and actually doing something with it in terms of either spending it or saving it. And there were some interesting learnings that we're going to chat to her about in terms of, you know, consuming and the consumption mindset versus the investment mindset, mm-hmm. and how that changes over time. And there's an impact, obviously, similar sort of questions, I guess, in every society as to whether people are spending every cent that they've got, or whether they actually are or recognize the value of having that saving and that extra on the side. Now, the one thing that always comes to mind, and I mean, we talk a lot about, let's call it fintech, and Greg, this is your space, is how people can use fintech to do different things, you know, and do the same stuff differently. And I'm pretty sure there's an opportunity here. Somebody's going to say to us, hey, well, here's a way to gift people. I mean, I can just see it, you know. Here's the way to gift your Chinese gift for the new year, you know, for the new year, cross to your friend on their cell phone, tap the cell phone, you know, the usual technology bump, you know, send you a card, whatever it may be. And then I'm going to create a platform that allows you to invest the sort of money. I mean, have you seen something of that sort of ilk in the technology space?
Yeah, fintech is one of the hottest spaces in Silicon Valley and the local innovation and entrepreneurship space. Anything that drives down transaction costs, makes cross-border transactions easier and cheaper and faster, anything that just disrupts banks is very, very hot. Mm. And banks are basically sitting back in a state of terror, trying to innovate themselves, and they're trying to find these companies and bring them in or invest in them so that they get some sort of upside. But the bottom line is, when you send a transaction from a South African bank in the UK to South Africa, it can take 5 days. Mm. And of course you have the interest rate spread as well. So there's a lot of money on the table that very smart entrepreneurs and investors are investing in now.
Mm. Both in
Africa and in the US.
Yeah. Now, I mean, let's talk for a moment about, let's call it, the savings culture that we have across the globe. I mean, is having a savings culture something that economies should be worrying about? Is this something that we should be thinking about, or do you know, is it important to have savings, I guess, is always the question. What are your views on that? I mean,
well, the average American has 90 days of money in the bank to survive, and the stats must be slightly worse in South Africa as well. On Gareth Cliff's program this morning, there was a guest talking about savings and spending. Mm. And basically, the average South African spends everything they have, and then they don't account for tax and other things. So they end up, you know, worse off year on year,
okay,
which is a bit of a problem.
Yeah,
because consumer savings drives business savings, which drives government savings and being able to invest back into the country.
Mm, that's always a concern. Musidi, do we have you back with us?
Yeah. Hi, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now. We lost you there for a few minutes. So in your engagement with in China, what was your learning about the red envelope exercise, and more particularly what people were doing with the content of this gift?
Yeah, to be honest, I was pleasantly surprised around the fact that it's the novelty around physical red envelopes is kind of worn off, so to say. Like, every time I'd ask people around, we get, you know, they call them hongbao over Christmas. They laughed at me and they said, but that's for kids. So it's something whereby kids customarily get them as gifts, well, like some family members and loved ones, for their Chinese New Year. But what's been interesting is how WeChat digitized the process of kind of distributing these red envelopes and then created like a game around it. So in the context of adults, how they're still applicable now is there's always like these games that stem from them where you can transfer digital red envelopes, not just for the Chinese New Year, but on an ongoing basis, for people to keep it social, like in their own words. They say now we just, it's part of like our social norms. We're over a birthday or something, we'll just send it to you. Or if you are late for like a team meeting or a social gathering, you will get fined and then you have to pay people in digital hongbao. So the novelty of them has, in the way which I understood or had the assumptions of how they work, is that they're more really relevant in terms of children, but then the digital ones are creating a good social and currency, if you want to call it that, that people don't really take seriously. But I would think that there's still so much opportunity that one could do to tap into. How do you match people to invest that money that they get to invest? Because the platforms and the sophistication in technology is there to make it really easy to do so.
Now, I mean, I guess the question is, as South Africans, I mean, we clearly struggle with the concept of, savings. We know that South Africa generally has a really poor culture of savings, generally. I mean, your learnings from this, you know, the 8 days that you spent in Shanghai, what is that challenge that they're experiencing consistent across your other environments? Is this not just a South African thing, but it's a global trend and a global challenge?
Yeah, I think it definitely is a global challenge, and we need not be hard on ourselves because we experience the same pressures of an economy that has a rising middle class and the ramifications from a spend first, then save mentality that stems from that. I mean, in China, it's quite evident that then the savings culture there has evolving quite drastically. In the past, the older generation used to be quite frugal, or still are, remain very frugal. And you know, put a big value or premium on saving, whereas the younger population, however, is growing up in a China that's achieving unprecedented growth and has been doing so for the past 30 years. So, and then there's a lot of incentive to consume. It's very easily done on mobile platforms like Alipay and WeChat. So for them, they also experience the same challenge. And disruptive technology has had a very good role to play in providing an easy mechanism by which they can consume. But then we must also exercise some prudence, especially at this time of the year, looking at Christmas. Sit down, and as households, people need to sit down and just be like, what is realistically our budget to afford for the toys for the kids, just for the rest of the families, and then what are wants and needs as well. One thing as well, walking away or coming back here, is like, I have no doubt that there will also, in a few years' time, at times, will we pay for everything using things like NetScan or Zeta, as they do in China. And it will be very difficult to also consider putting money away when it's so easy to and convenient to buy the things we want and not necessarily need. So, I was pleasantly surprised as well around the fact that there isn't such a strong savings culture in China anymore, and it's been eroded by making it easy for people to consume using technology.
So I guess what I'm hearing is you're saying, the more enabled we make the payment stream, the less likely we are to see savings happen, because people it's just so easy to spend, and it's there, and it's as you say, at the end of SnapScan and the end of anything that you know all the different payment methods and methodologies, and thus you're able to actually almost spend it without having to give too much thought to it. It's quite interesting. I always say, it's a challenge of people having more month over than money, when they get to the 23rd and there's not enough to get to the 25th. But that is kind of an indicator of where things are at globally, where people are constantly under pressure. I mean, for the first time in a long time, I've heard people at senior levels saying to me things like, I'm battling to come out on my salary, I'm dipping into my savings, to come out in a month. And these are people that are professionals. They're able to earn and demand fairly good salaries, etc. And when people like that are saying they're struggling in a consumption ridden environment, you really have to pay attention and say, sure, you know, that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, and I think what's concerning as well is how easy it is to access debt. So these short-term loans that every bank now offers, like they say, apparently with longer, product like longer, you can get a short-term loan in 6 seconds. So what that does to they come with a very high interest that people are either unaware of or they are aware of them, but then they need the money so desperately, they're willing to forego or override the fact that it costs them so much to get access to those loans. I think that's the one big problem. Mm. And a lot of people in China as well were touching on it before to say, never before did we have people wanting or demanding credit so much that it's slowly but surely rapidly creeping into the economy, and they have to find a way to actually curb it through developing a social credit system. Mm. So a very transparent, visible way where you, like a TransUnion, so just a lot more visibility to a broader market. So anybody that wants to lend you money for anything, or where you want to take out a lease, to have access to that information around your credit worthiness, mm. which wasn't really a problem before.
Yeah. So I think I guess the flip side to savings is availability of credit, and just how easy that is, and the challenges that we're faced with that.
Yeah, okay. and also in trying to like open up really good savings for investment products, it's quite cumbersome. You need a lot of paperwork. There's no straight through at a click of a button. Do it, but you are seeing some of that innovation or companies applying themselves. Looking at how can they enable that.
Mm, right. Okay, stay with us for part two as we discuss the culture of savings, both locally and internationally. Stay with us for part two.
This is CliffCentral.com.